Welcome to Box Office Bob-ombs. If a movie is based on a video game, chances are it's going to blow. Across the aisle from me is a man who is not a friend or a co-host, but a friend with whom I co-host this show, Dylan Flynn.
And across the aisle from me, a one-man trio of legendary birds. He's a total quack, he's absolutely cuckoo, and he's completely chicken shit, Mr. Trevor Ickrath. Welcome to the show, Trevor.
Thank you, Dylan. We're back for our second sequel of the show's run so far.
That's right. Every now and then so far, we've had this perilous moment where we find out that we're doing two movies in one property in a row, and here we are once again doing just that thing.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help that both times we've had to do a sequel so far, it's been back-to-back with the original movie. I think later on down the line, we'll start to see them paced out a little more evenly.
It is a sign, though, isn't it? If a movie sequel comes within 1 or 2 year of the first one, it doesn't inspire a lot of faith.
For sure.
That it's been too focused or intensive of a process to make that next one.
Yeah, you got to imagine they're just trying to strike while the iron's hot, get as much money out of this thing as possible while people still got eyes on it. Today, we're going to be talking about Pokemon the Movie 2000, a.k.a. The Power of One.
If you thought you knew everything there is to know about Pokemon, prepare to be shocked.
Pokemon is demonic. The evil Pokemon. The devil Pokemon. And the Pokemon who mocks Jesus Christ. The fact that the Vatican, which has been taken over by wolves in sheep's clothing, gave its approval to Pokemon, doesn't exonerate Pokemon, but only condemns it further.
Starts July 21st, rated G.
The title situation here is such a head-scratcher for me. I mean, like, just the whole inconsistency of, is it called Pokemon the Movie 2000? Is it called The Power of One? I mean, I think when it comes to theaters, it's Pokemon the Movie 2000, so we can kind of ignore the episode for A New Hope of it all.
Sure, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Pokemon the Movie 2000, though, if ever there was a title that did not inspire a ton of confidence that a lot of creative thought was going into this thing, that would probably be it, right? Like, what do you want to call the new Pokemon movie? It's going to be the year 2000. That sounds futuristic. Pokemon the Movie 2000.
This movie was released by Warner Brothers on July 21st, 2000 under the Kids WB label, and it's based on the Pokemon franchise of games published by Nintendo.
Right, and just like we said last time, based on not only the games, but the anime and the card game. This was another movie where if you went, you got a special little card.
Boy, did they get real excited about the tie-in potential, the synergy potential of that fucking card angle, didn't they?
I forgot that it actually shows up in the movie at the end.
Shameless.
For like no fucking reason. What even is that within the universe of the show? Who knows?
It's almost like if they turned to Ash and said, there's only one artifact that can save the world, and then like handed him a DVD copy of Pokemon the Movie 2000. this movie cost $30 million to produce, up from $5 million for the first Pokemon movie.
It cost six times more than the first movie. Is it six times better? I don't know about that.
I suppose it's a little bit respectable that at least they're not shitting out a feature film for $5
million. Yeah.
It earned $133.9 million internationally, down from $172.7 million for the first movie, the first Pokemon movie.
Okay, so either Pokemon Fever had, you know, cooled a little bit, or there were some parents out there who were just like, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah, it's got to be a mix of both, right?
Yeah. I remember going to see this movie in theaters, though. I mean, I don't specifically have the memory of going to the theater. I just know that I went to see it in theaters. I feel like you being a few years older than me, I feel like you might have been just kind of on the cusp of aging out of Pokemon at this time. Was that true, or were you still really in it?
What a prescient thing you've just said, because it occurs to me that like I was in the throes of Pokemon Fever, opening night crowd for Pokemon the first movie. I didn't even go to this one.
That doesn't surprise me, because how old were you?
I would have been 12, which means I was firmly in middle school now, and I have to imagine you don't want to be the sixth grader showing up with a binder of Pokemon cards, getting hyped about the new Pokemon movie. Like, you're trying to stay out of the bottom of the social totem pole. You're like, Pokemon's for babies, I would imagine.
This would have been like Social Capital's suicide for like a middle schooler, I have to imagine.
Oh man, did you see Lugia? I wonder if it'll be in the next game. But meanwhile, I feel like it was still totally fine to play the game. I remember people bringing their Game Boys to middle school and playing the games.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a divide there where, like, you could still play the game, but if you were like, oh, did you watch what Ash did on this week's episode of Pokemon? You were just, like, a total beyond saving nerd.
That's so weird. Different soft power, different semiotics for the different styles of Pokemon fandom. Very weird.
Yeah.
So this one opened on 2,751 screens, down from 2,900 screens for the first movie. Still the second widest release for a video game movie so far. This is such a subtle metric, the way that the distributors can really tap right into the lifeblood of a property like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think these numbers make sense to me. 200 less screens, yeah, that tracks.
Especially if you consider that first movie would have come on the heels of, like, the news is doing free marketing for Pokemon.
Yeah.
You know, like, every other news story is about, yo, Pokemon cards are getting banned from the schoolyard.
Yeah, the Pokemon Blitzkrieg had passed by this point, so you really only have, like, the people who are still, like, super invested going to see this one, I guess.
Which is a non-negligible amount of people.
That's true.
133.9 mil ain't bad.
The Pokemon machine was still pumping them out, for sure. Do you want to talk about the plot of this movie?
Yeah, can you tell me what happens in this movie? I need a quick refresher.
One man's ploy to collect a powerful Pokemon of legend has thrust the world into apocalyptic chaos. Now our fate is in the hands of Ash Ketchum and his quest to gather three orbs and place them into their corresponding pedestals.
You know, sometimes you gotta fight the scary robot to save the world. Sometimes you just gotta get some key items.
You just gotta go get the three elemental orbs, bring them back to the Temple of Time. You get the Master Sword. You use it to kill Lugia. I didn't watch the end of this movie, but I assume that's what happens, right?
Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Lugia's dead.
Yeah.
Speaking of Lugia, we got characters to talk about. Let's save the listener a bit of time, shall we?
Yeah. Another thing that's great about these sequel episodes, we should just say that the voice actors for Ash, Pikachu, Misty, Jesse, James, and Meowth all return. Who's missing? You definitely noticed when I read that list. Brock is not really in this movie except for a quick background cameo.
So this was a situation, I guess, where he temporarily left the anime, and the feeling, I guess, was that the Pokemon Company was concerned that he would be read as a racial stereotype. He is dark-skinned. Are they trying to say that, like, that might be read as racially insensitive? I don't really understand. I also am not exactly sure what race Brock is coded as, to be honest.
I could speak to this a little bit because I distinctly remember whenever I would watch the Pokemon TV show, my mother would think that Brock was like a Japanese stereotype because he had like squinty eyes.
Okay, that makes, I suppose, sense.
Yeah.
But we should talk about the people who are new to this movie. We'll start, of course, with Lawrence the Third, an airship piloting supervillain with a most unscrupulous and upsetting and loathsome hobby, collecting Pokemon. Oh, can you imagine, Trevor, the horror?
This is pretty interesting, right? I wanted to talk a little about this because this was kind of the most fascinating part of the movie to me.
Very weird. When it gets on its soapbox and says, how dare you? How dare you?
Disgusting! The way you talk, it's like Pokemon are just things to collect, like dolls or stamps. What kind of trainer are you?
It's interesting because, like, it feels like both this one and the previous movie are doing so much to undermine and subvert, like, such core tenets of the Pokemon franchise.
It's wrong to make these Pokemon fight.
Yeah.
And it's wrong to collect these Pokemon like they're objects.
Like, motherfucker, that's all you're telling me to do. What am I supposed to do in these games if these...
tagline.
Yeah.
Gotta catch them all, motherfucker.
At the same time, that does feel like almost like a worthwhile exercise to be doing in these like feature-length Pokemon episodes.
To get kids to look inward and consider their behaviors. I agree.
Like they get like a little meta with it, you know? Like I can only like I like picturing myself as a 10-year-old seeing this movie, sitting there in the theater thinking like, wait, are we the baddies?
It's pretty good, yeah. Lawrence the Third, the Pokemon collector played by Neil Stewart.
I really did not get much out of this guy whatsoever.
There's not a lot on the page, that's for sure.
Yeah. Who else we got? We got Melody, a young denizen of Shamudi Island who leads the Legend Festival that the island observes. She's played by Amy Birnbaum.
Definitely a spunky character with a very interesting prop. I like her little flute that she has. It's got a weird, like, you turn it as you play it. There's a rotating part. Interesting prop.
Ocarinas were really having a big moment here at the end of the 20th century.
Then you got Carol, Melody's older sister, played by Michelle Gauguin. I guess the idea is that she used to be the leader of the festival and she's kind of aged out of it. Now her little sister's going to do it.
One of the more interesting characters in the film, kind of, we've got Slowking, an English-speaking water Pokemon who oversees Shimudi Shrine, played by Nathan Price.
The movie never totally addresses why Slowking can speak, but I thought that this voice that Nathan Price was doing was kind of funny. It sort of feels like a voice that he did, like they must have shown him a picture of Slowking and he was like, oh, okay, I'm Slowking, da, 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 da. And they're like, no, he's like powerful and has a lot of dignity. He's like, okay, I'll back it off. I'm Slowking, da, 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 da. It's like he never quite stopped sounding like a fucking goofball.
Only the chosen one can bring together the treasures to help the water's great guardian.
He never really quite gets anything to do in this movie either.
Well, he has to tell Ash that he doesn't have all three of those orbs yet.
Yeah, big impact. Talking about characters that have a big impact on this film, we got the man, the myth, the legend himself, Lugia, a powerful legendary Pokemon and guardian of the sea, played by Eric Rath.
Wow. I mean, the majesty of this bird, would you say? I don't know.
Something that I always liked about him was that he clearly had fingers.
Yeah.
And watching the movie this time, I kept imagining how good he would be at playing a bass guitar.
Motherfucker with those wing-ass limbs, he can slap it.
Yeah. Going back to the cast, we also got Marin, a captain who brings Ash and his friends to Orange Islands, played by Tara Jane.
I was very disoriented during this opening part of the film where they were throwing these new characters at me because clearly there's some stuff happening in the anime past my involvement with the anime. I'm like, is this an established person? Is this a person who's from there already?
Yeah, the most disorienting introduction, though, for me was the first time you see this next guy we're going to talk about.
Oh boy, infamous in the fandom, I guess.
Really? Okay, so this is Tracy Sketchit, a quote-unquote Pokemon Watcher, which makes him sound like a pervert. I guess he joins Ash's crew after Brock leaves to become a Pokemon breeder, which also sounds like some kind of pervert job.
You can almost imagine it working for Brock's character if he's like, whoa, Pokemon's fuck?
Yeah, I'm getting into that.
Wait, I could be around Dittos all day and nobody's watching me?
Oh, God. But yeah, Tracy Sketchit, I'd forgotten about this dude. The first time he popped up on screen, I audibly said, who the fuck is that?
He is sort of hated by the fandom because he has way less personality than Brock, obviously. And then he's like, he's the new Brock. And people are like, we don't like him, though.
Not Brock.
Anyway, that guy's played by Ted Lewis.
We've also got Professor Oak, the Pokemon professor who gave Ash his Pikachu, played by Stuart Zagnett. Also interesting to see was Ash's mom, Delia Ketchum, played by Veronica Taylor, who also voices Ash. I thought that was pretty obvious that these two were voiced by the same character.
I definitely, like, when she showed up, was able to clock, oh, that's Ash's mom. So she must have also been in the anime.
I remember there being a lot of jokes, even at the time, about her cohabitating with that Mr. Mime.
Oh, that guy, you're so right. Yeah. That completely unlocked an entire series of jokes that I made and heard. That's so weird.
Owning a bunch of Pokemon isn't super weird, but when you only have one that you're living with, and it is fairly anthropomorphic, and it also has psychic powers that allows you to kind of communicate with it on some level, you got to imagine there's something going on there.
People are going to talk at the very least, yeah.
Yeah.
And then lastly, and very important to the plot of the film, you got Articuno, Zapdos, and Moltres, the original Gen 1 legendary bird trio, very heavily featured.
And I think all three of these were voiced by those YouTube videos of the goat that screams like a man.
That's right. Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
But let's move on and talk about the critical reception of this movie.
For sure. So on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 19% critic score, marginally up from 16% for the first Pokemon movie, and a 56% user score, down from 72% for the first Pokemon movie. So the fans like it a little less, the critics like it just a hair more.
That slight increase in the critic score is baffling to me. I really can't see anything in this movie that critics would have seen as an improvement over the first one. Maybe they were just like, you know, worn down and a few of them had decided to just give up.
I think it owes to the marginally increased production values. I think that if all of Pokemon is gobbledygook to you anyway,
yeah,
the things that the first movie is doing in its story that are subtler than this are probably not going to register for you at all.
Yeah.
But you might notice that, like, there are moments of animation that are a little bit more flashy.
Yeah, whatever. I could see, like, a relatively decent-looking CGI airship being worth 3% on a critic score, I guess.
You can see, but can you speak when you tell me this critic quote about the movie?
Sure. John R. McEwen of The Republican says, Pikachu has very little to do with the plot, so diehard fans may be disappointed. On the other hand, I dare say diehard fans could not possibly be discriminating enough to notice, since most of them are still in diapers. Got him! He roasted him!
I just love it when these critics go both barrels at children.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Great. They don't care.
Yeah.
Fucking six-year-olds, fuck you.
You send me a lot of good Rotten Tomatoes user reviews for this.
Users were wilded.
Yeah. But you've only selected one for us to officially read on the show. That's from Rotten Tomatoes user Liam D., who says, Pokemon is the greatest movie ever. Ask my four brothers, nine dogs, seven goldfish, eight pear trees, nine Pokemons, and a partridge in a pear tree. Rotten Tomatoes suck Mongo Donk. This guy's got eight pear trees and only one partridge.
Suck Mongo Donk.
Yeah.
Let's talk about trivia. I've got one little thing for you and then just an epic tale.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into this. But first, we'll talk about some people who are almost in this movie. Both Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen passed on offers to play Lawrence III. The character was ultimately played by Neil Stewart, as we mentioned earlier. But his IMDb page lists only four credits, interestingly enough. There's this movie, two independent films, and a 1996 PC game called Pink Panther, Passport to Peril.
I guess they're like, well, Patrick Stewart and McKellen won't do it. Hey, let's get our buddy Neil.
Yeah, he was in that Pink Panther game. That's a video game. This is based on a video game. It'll work perfectly.
Let's zoom in. Last week, we learned a lot about Meow's voice actress. Let's learn about another piece of personnel. Let's get to know screenwriter Takeshi Shudo.
Sure, tell me a little about this guy, because he's got a pretty interesting story.
Well, he was a very eccentric guy, a very eccentric creative thinker. I'm going to quote him describing his creative process. When I write the characters' dialogue and emotions, I become them. I am possessed by them. My personality changes. That's why I can't show myself to people while I'm working on a story. I move around the room like the character and mutter their dialogue under my breath. An ex-girlfriend accused me of having multiple personality disorder. He also heavily abused alcohol and tranquilizers throughout his life and his career, and he saw them as essential to his process, to his creative abilities. He said, the perspectives of various characters come to me in chaos. I barely eat while I write, but I drink a lot. I do edit sober. To check if I'm too drunk to write, I try to recite pi to 12 digits. When I can't do that, I stop writing.
All very interesting stuff. And I got to say, both of those quotes kind of like made this movie skyrocket up the list of films that I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for when they were getting written. Because I can think of a few things I'd enjoy watching more than just like an extremely drunk and stoned Japanese man just kind of bumbling around a small room by himself with like some pages open on a desk going like, Pikachu, use Thunderbolt. Oh, no, Thunderbolt didn't work. Zapdos is coming. Oh, okay, then we got to get the orbs. And then we got 3.146. And then the airship comes. And
he also said in that, I didn't include it in the doc, he said in the interview that like specifically for this movie, he would go to sailor and fisherman bars in Japan and get drunk with fishermen to hear their stories so that he could like,
hell yeah,
get into the mind set of nautical living. And he was like, yeah, my doctor really wants me to cut back, but you know, the job's the job.
You gotta sacrifice your health for the Pokemon movie. So when scripting the first Pokemon movie, this guy enjoyed a surprising amount of creative freedom, a lot of which was like kind of attributed to how swamped the Pokemon company was with dealing with that seizure controversy,
right,
that we talked about in the last episode. Due to that going on, they weren't really paying too much attention to the film's production. So this guy was kind of allowed to run wild and incorporate some of those darker and philosophical themes that wound up making their way into the Mewtwo movie.
Right. Dead daughter, et cetera.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he was not allowed the same level of freedom for Pokemon the Movie 2000.
Lugia was an original creation. Shudo came up with Lugia for his screenplay, and he made some requests. He requested that Lugia would remain exclusive for the film. He would not make any other appearances in the video game series. Also, as scripted, he saw Lugia as female because he kind of imagined her as like a maternal deity figure, you know, like a Mother Gaia or whatever.
Yeah, I could see that.
Weirdly, also, the first draft that this guy turned in completely excluded Ash and all of the other characters from the anime entirely and established an all new cast of like human characters. And in all of these cases, Takeshi Shudo's vision was completely overruled by the Pokemon Company. They said, yeah, no, none of that. We're not doing that.
So all that studio interference really disheartened Shudo. He only wound up scripting one more Pokemon movie after this, and then he quit the franchise to go on to work on smaller manga and anime projects. Until his hard living finally caught up with him in 2010, when he suffered a massive stroke in the smoking lounge of his local train station, dying the next day at age 61.
Who knew at the heart of this Pokemon franchise that there was like a fucking Bukowski-esque, you know, tortured, substance-abusing true artist? I had no idea.
Yeah, it just really makes you think about how much blood, sweat, and tears is so frequently shed in order to produce media for little children.
Yep, for sure. It definitely makes me wish that there had been more kids who died of a seizure before this movie came out so that this guy could have made this movie more fucked up and interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about how fucked up and interesting it wound up being, though, and get into our tier list selections.
Okay, so I have the F tier this week. I'm going to put into the F tier this movie's aggressive shipping of Ash and Misty.
Oh my god, this subplot was interminable.
I know. Maybe if I had been 11 or 12 when I saw this, this all would have hit me a little differently, but I start to feel a little creepy as a 36-year-old when the movie is just like pushing this line of like, are you Ash's girlfriend? You should marry Ash. Yeah. I'm not his girlfriend. I'm a girl who's a friend. I'm just like, I don't need to think about these children and whether or not they're in love with each other. This is not for me. To kind of calm myself down during the screening, I did Google, like, do Ash and Misty end up a couple at some point? And I'm happy to report to you, Trevor, that Ash has never shown any sexual interest in any character in Pokemon. He's an ace king. We stand an ace king.
Doesn't surprise me. I do specifically remember, though, I'd be interested if you had this as well, because we talked on the last episode about CD copies of the Pokemon the First movie soundtrack. But there was another, like, Pokemon music release of this era that came out on CD that had, like, original songs written for the show. Do you remember this? Did you have this?
Yeah, this had the Poke Rap on it. It had
the Poke Rap. It had a song about going to Viridian City. I remember that.
I believe I'm looking at it now. Pokemon to Be a Master. Yes. Music from the hit TV series.
And there was a whole song on that CD that I remember skipping every time that was sung by Misty's voice actress and was, like, set during, like, a quieter moment in the Pokemon TV show where, like, throughout the course of the song, Misty explored her feelings for Ash.
Ooh, boy.
And was like, are you ever going to feel the same way about me?
I think that the dynamic that these two normally lock into the anime is the one where she's annoyed by how much of an indefatigable little kid he is, and she's, like, trying to act more mature, and he's following whimsy and annoying her.
Yeah, I don't think this whole subplot would have been, like, too egregious for me if there was, like, much else going on in the movie, but this is, like, it almost feels like this is, like, 25% of the movie, and it's, like, really the only thing any of the characters have approaching, like, an arc.
Not only is it a running gag, it, like, informs a big character moment at the end where it's like, he'll never be alone as long as he has me, and I accept that there is weird sexual tension in our relationship. This is the end of my arc.
Yeah, not only not a good arc, but, like, a really weird, bad place for that arc to end up, I would say. So, yeah, I think this is a very strong choice for the F tier.
I felt strongly about it coming out of it. What about the D tier, Trevor? What are you putting in the D tier? Something that definitely didn't work for you.
I alluded to it a little earlier. For the D tier, I've selected the voice acting for the legendary birds, especially during the scenes where they're in captivity and they're just fucking screaming nonstop.
Oh man,
so bad. We already talked about how bad the Pokemon voice acting is in these English dubs, but here it really feels like they took it up a notch.
Yeah,
it is really giving those goat screams like a man YouTube videos.
Well, that's a great segue into my pick for the C tier.
Okay,
I put into the C tier Zapdos's voice.
Great.
You know, there's a thing in the anime, it always kind of read as a gag to me for some reason whenever one of the Pokemon would, like, rather than saying its own name, just kind of roar, Squirtle, I choose you, Squirtle, 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 and then be like, Onix, I choose you, and he just go, roar.
Yeah.
Just make me laugh for some reason. But this is that, holy shit. Like, that moment when Zapdos shows up, I fucking started rolling. I even got a clip of it. I wanted to play it.
Cool.
Just so that the listener could be brought in. Yeah. Here we go.
Ah!
I feel like it even gets worse once, like, all the birds get trapped and they're all on, like, the cargo bay with the other guys and they're just screaming in captivity.
He just sounds like a human being who's on fire. Yeah.
The only thing that could possibly redeem this for me would be if, like, voice acting for these birds were actual clips of Shudo, like, making the noises while he was writing the film.
I would respect the choice a little bit more if it's because he attached a little analog tape of him making those noises. Such a plaintive wail. I mean, like,
yeah.
I think I alone in my bedroom, I laughed harder at that than any, like, actual joke that any of these movies have served up so far. But very immersion-breaking, obviously, and awful, to the point that, like, when I would get bored during the movie, I'd be like, man, I hope Zapdos shows up and just starts shrieking again. I'm going to put it in the seat there. Obviously, it's not working in the film's favor, despite my mirth. It is funny how we linked up there.
The legendary birds were one of my main sources of amusement in this movie, because in addition to the voice acting, I really just kind of liked the, like, unbridled hater energy that a lot of them seem to have. Like, these guys were just out here to fuck each other up, and during certain sequences, they really do that.
Obviously, the legendary birds ain't no fucking Mewtwo in terms of, like, a legendary Pokemon element to the plot that would emotionally involve you in any way.
Yeah.
So I don't think they compare favorably, but I do think that, like, as legendary Pokemon go, they're iconic. I love the names. It's great localization.
That's true.
I think in Japanese, they have very annoyingly stupid names, like Moltres is like fire and Articuno is icer.
Yeah, clearly not as good. Let's continue talking about our tiers, though. I've got the B tier next. I struggled over one I wanted to put here, and really with my feelings about who I've wound up putting here. But for the B tier, I've selected Tracy Sketchit.
Okay, yeah, I get it, because who is this guy?
I don't think I've ever seen any character in any movie ever that was so ancillary to the movie in every single way that he could be. Like,
yeah.
He has no impact on the plot.
At all.
Not only am I pretty sure that he's never addressed by name in the movie, but I also can't really remember any of the other characters even talking to him at all.
I think maybe Ash in the very first scene does, maybe?
I don't know. He has a line here and there, but it's never really answered. But there's also just something about that really amuses me. You know, the fact that this movie,
sure,
for all intents and purposes, just has this totally extra guy just chilling in it.
Right.
If I were a character in this movie, if these events were really happening to me, that's exactly the role I would want to play in these events. So I wound up sticking him relatively high. He gets the B tier. Tracy Sketchit.
He gets the B tier. Yeah, it is funny. There's almost an element of, like, is Ash imagining him?
Yeah.
Because he has so little efficacy, so little agency.
It would have made sense if they had done some kind of contest where, like, you could enter, and if you won, you would get to be a character in, like, the new Pokemon movie. But, like, since, like, they didn't know who it was going to be, they couldn't really have them do, like, an actual role. So instead, like, you're just kind of hanging out. If Tracy Sketchit had wound up to be a real person.
Yeah, totally. Ancillary is the word, right? Because, yeah, like, he really does feel like he was grafted on here. No arc. He does absolutely nothing. Occasionally shows up and says something.
He's just chilling. Tracy Sketchit.
For the A tier, I submit the following prophecy. Disturb not the harmony of fire, ice, or lightning. Let these titans wreak destruction on the world in which they clash. Though the water's great guardian shall arise to quell the fighting, alone its song will fail, thus the earth shall turn to ash.
Okay. They say that? That's like the first thing we hear at the beginning of the movie, I think.
And they say it several times throughout. Listen, when I was watching this movie, my brain activity level, it might not have even registered.
Sure.
If I'd had electrodes on my skull. Yeah. I was down to total auxiliary power mode. So I'm excited to inform you that I did not see this whole world turn to ash twist coming.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
Oh, you do? Great. Empty heads, no problem.
Yep.
I was just like, yeah, world turn to ash because it's going to get destroyed by those big birds.
When they did the reveal, I was like, oh, yeah, that is his name.
Me too. That exact same moment. I was like, fuck, that's right. The world will turn to him. He's the hero. It reminded me of that classic moment in 1943 Son of Dracula when Van Helsing goes, wait a minute, Alucard, that's Dracula backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an incredible twist if you're a fucking idiot like we are.
Or probably like a small child.
Also unique to the localization, there's no equivalent situation going on, pun twist going on in the Japanese version. So between that and the legendary birds, you know, maybe Neil Grossman's not looking so bad like he did last year.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put this in the A tier just because it was one moment where I was like, ha ha, cool, clever, liked.
Well, that takes me to the S tier, and I think it's always nice when, you know, a movie that I'm not really feeling particularly strong about kind of hands me on a silver platter, something that I feel very confident saying that I do like with no asterisks. And in this case, it's got to be Lawrence III's airship.
Oh, yeah, that big old fucking thing.
Even as a kid, one thing that has not changed about me at all since I was a little kid is that I am a sucker for a very cool airship. And this thing is a great example of that. The design is really rad. It functions great as a plot device that is able to keep like a lot of the film's action up in the air, I thought.
Conducive to all the birds involved.
Yeah, yeah. And the long tracking shot of Ash and Team Rocket running down the side of the exterior as parts of it are destroyed, I thought that was easily like the best shot in the movie.
Yeah.
Probably better looking than anything in the first movie. It's even a good example of that rare sort of CGI that clearly looks dated, but still actually looks pretty cool and like kind of gives you a bit of nostalgia for the era rather than being like, oh man, we weren't there yet.
It's like the Beauty and the Beast chandelier.
Yeah.
Like there's something that feels right about it.
So yeah, if there was anything in this movie that I didn't feel two ways about, it was the airship.
The only thing I will say about it is that it's so crazy that this man occupies like his own floating city.
Yeah.
And then you get no information about him at all. Like, how did this guy end up just bobbing around in this fucking gigantic supervillain craft?
Yeah, Lawrence III, who are you?
I think he mentions that his mom dies at the end.
Okay.
According to the Pokemon Wiki, the canon name for that airship, the Flying Palace.
Not a very cool name, but...
Once you go on Carfax and fucking get it for a sweet deal, you can name whatever the fuck you want, Trevor.
That's true. Yeah, I'll have to look that up after this.
Let's review this bad boy, right? We've done all of our tiering. Now it's time to get into our score metric we borrow from 90s Game Pro Magazine, broken down into categories, the first of which is graphics.
Yep. I don't have too much to say about the graphics for this movie that I feel like didn't really apply to the first Pokemon movie. I think some stuff looked a little better. Other things looked a little worse. I gave the last movie a 4, and I feel like considering this movie came afterwards, there really is no excuse for anything looking worse. So I'm going to bump this one down to a 3.5.
I don't know if anything red is particularly worse. I think the movie sinks down to roughly the baseline lowest level of the last one, but there were some improved production values that I was taking in. Some impressive little hero shots. There's that initial one of like the camera swooping in on Pikachu when he's on the bow of the boat, and they do it.
Yeah.
They do it Ghibli style. They don't cheat. They hand draw each frame to let you zoom in, you know, like in a legit way. Other sequences of the movie are maybe a little less impressive. I gave the last one 1.5. I'll come up to a 2.0.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite more complicated shots in the movie, and this one felt like a shot that did not need to be as complicated as it was, but there's like there's a shot of like Team Rocket pulling out a life raft while one of the boats is getting destroyed, and it's like this incredible like 360 turn around them as they inflate the raft and then hop on it. Really did not need to go as hard as it did, but they really snuck a cool little sequence in there.
Let's talk about sound. The licensed music, significantly less egregious this time around. The opening credit song, Pokemon World by Youngstown, I think that's kind of a bop. I like the vibe that it brings to that opening boat ride. The closing credit song, on the other hand, The Power of One by Donna fucking Summer.
Yeah.
That's at the very least a cultural curio. And then if you stick around after that, you get Pokemon by Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
Key lyric, it's time to polka for Ponyta and Pidgey too. Come on, put on your lederhosen.
That, for some reason, that lyric has never left my brain since I saw it in the theater, probably. Like, if you asked me, like, a week ago, like, do you remember any lyrics from that song that Weird Al did about Pokemon for the Pokemon 2000 movie? I would have been like, you know, not really, but I do specifically remember there was one about trying not to step on little Pikachu.
There sure is. But I actually think that Lugia's song, that Melody plays on her little cool-looking flute, especially the fully richly orchestrated version of it that happens at the end with the acoustic guitar accompaniment is a genuinely stirring little piece of music and would not be out of place in like an Uematsu Final Fantasy soundtrack. You do have the baggage of this voice cast, of course. We talked about the legendary birds.
Yeah.
You still have the bass line of Ash Ketchum and the Veronica Taylor screeching. But I'm going to come up because I think that it's earned some extra consideration. I think I was at like a 2.5 last week. I'm going to come up to a 3.5.
Okay, that's pretty high. I gave the first one a 1.5 for sound, I think. Mm-hmm. And this one really does have a lot to contend with, I think. Because like we both talked about, those legendary bird noises are pretty rough.
They are.
So I was tempted to go as low as possible here. I do think the end credits music is kind of the saving grace here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bump this one up to a 2. The two songs at the end might even pull a little more weight if they had managed to make it into the movie proper. But since you kind of got to stick around for the credits to hear them, I'm not going to let them sway my score too much. Let's talk about control, though. I thought this one was interesting. This is kind of how we gauge how much the movie we're watching feels like a video game. And I do actually feel, you know, we both kind of agreed on the first one that felt a lot more like the anime than Pokemon the video game. Here, I think they do get slightly more video gamey with it, just because like having to go collect 3 different elemental orbs is such a classic staple of the video game experience.
For sure. Get 3 key items, return to this place, and then like unlock the last boss. This is probably the most video game plot line that we've seen on, it's a quest line.
Real classic stuff. So I'm going to go up to a 2.5 on this one.
I'm a right around you. I'll go up to a 3.0. I was just so struck by the fact that not only do you have to get these key items, they're each on their own, like, different biome-themed islands.
Yeah.
A snow island, you know, a fire island. Again, maybe we're not Pokemon video gaming it up,
but
we're video gaming it up for sure.
Next up, we've got the fun factor, which gauges how much fun we had watching the movie. This one was a struggle for me.
Yeah.
You know, I think unless you're already a fan of the Pokemon anime and you're invested in it, I really can't imagine what somebody would really get out of this movie. Like, it's got a kind of, like, environmental theme, which I guess is, like, something, but that's not very fun.
Right.
I think the fight scenes with the legendary birds are slightly reminiscent of, like, classic kaiju battles, so those may appeal if you're at least into Godzilla movies or something like that. But other than that, this movie really did not feel like it was serving up anything that, like, a layman would be able to have much fun with. And as a result, I did not have much fun with it. I'm going to go to a 1.5.
Let's see. I laughed real hard at the Zapdos voice, so that's fun.
Yeah.
There was one Meowth gag that I thought was, like, nicely done. It's the one where, like, Jesse's like, I'd hate to get burnt by their fire. James is like, I'd hate to get zapped by their lightning. And Meowth goes, I'd hate to get hit by their droppings, which I just thought, like,
that was a good joke.
Good joke. It also is like, yeah, these Pokemon, we should be discussing the fact that they shit more, shouldn't we? But boy, yeah, I don't know. This plot, there's nothing really here.
No footholds, nothing to grasp onto.
I'm right with you. I'm at a 1.5 is what I got here in the document, so that's what I gave it.
Yeah, and I feel like my challenge rating is kind of going to reflect that a little. I don't know. I'm going to have to go all the way up to advanced on this one, I think, you know? Unless you're trying to see some Pokemon, there just isn't a ton. I'm going to go up to advanced.
I had a pretty hard time focusing to the point that there was a moment where Ash got to the shrine and he put down 2 of the orbs, and I realized I don't remember him getting one of those 2 orbs at all. What was I doing? Was I on my phone? What was going on? And I ended up like having to go back to the scene where he was on that island and got that orb. And I realized like, yeah, I did see this, but it just like
in one ear, out the other.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. It ghosted right through my brain.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe I'm being a little harsh, but I'm going to give this an expert because I really did have a hard time just like sitting in my chair and watching the goddamn Pokemon movie.
That feels fair. I gotta say, that does feel fair. You know, I think if any of the movies we've talked about so far warrant an expert rating, it's this one. We were always going
to
reach one.
Something I did notice is that when you go to a we ranked every Pokemon movie listicle, of which there are seemingly endless on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
This does get ranked above the first movie a lot. And I wonder what that's all about.
I would really love to sit down and talk to somebody who really, really loves this movie. I would like to hear like some actual like proselytizing on the virtues of this film, because I really just didn't get a lot out of here. And I would be very interested to see what some of the Poke fans are seeing in this movie, other than just like actually just getting to look at Pokemon.
Sound off in those YouTube comments if that's you. We're asking for your input.
Yeah.
And I'm asking if you'd like to hear what's happening when I played the video game.
Yeah, did you go back to Gold and Silver, I guess, this time around you would have done?
Hell no. I'm invested in my save file for Pokemon Blue, and I picked up right where I left off.
Okay.
I got a few more badges and shit, but I don't know. Once you get to Celadon City and the game kind of opens up and becomes a bit more nonlinear, it's harder to kind of take you beat by beat through my journey. I will say the last thing I did was I arrived at Cinnabar Island, which means I've got two more badges and then the Elite Four to go. However, I am proud to announce that my team, my roster of box office ba-bomb freaks, is now fully formed.
Cool.
Let's run through the whole team, right?
All right.
We got Blastoise as Toad.
Yep.
We got Raichu as Blanka, and we got Persian as Kilrathi. Now, we knew those last time. Let's get to know some of these other guys. Machamp as Goro. I mean, come on, forearms.
Perfect, yeah. I mean, that's a layup, yeah.
Here's another good one. How about Marowak as Shao Kahn with the skull mask, right?
Ooh, yeah, very creative. I like it.
I'm going to have to defend this one, though. Obviously, Abobo has to be my sixth team member. He's an indelible box office bomb freak. Far-fetched as Abobo, question mark?
I don't see the vision.
Well, he's got a leak in his mouth.
Oh.
And Abobo is force-fed spinach.
That's true. That's true.
But more importantly, he can learn fly and cut. So I had to have an HM slave there.
Yep.
And Abobo seemed like he would finish out the roster. I'm going to finish this file. I'm going to roll credits on Pokemon Blue.
Go catch Mewtwo and all that, too?
Yeah, I probably will do the post-game stuff. Why not, right? So, speaking of video games and ones that don't actually exist, on this show, Trevor likes to finish us off with a very beloved segment where he tells us, what if this was not a video game, but then the movie is such a success that they made a video game based on the movie?
That's right.
Last time, I believe you pitched us a 2D team-based fighting game. What do you got for me this week for the video game adaptation of Pokemon the Movie 2000?
Racing game. This was super easy. It's a racing game. Oh, right. Probably like,
yeah, totally.
Either like flight-based or ocean-based. Maybe some characters would be in boats. Some characters would be flying on Pokemon. Other characters would just be Pokemon flying.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a racing game. Specifically, I think it would be called Pokemon Flight of Lugia.
Oh, yeah, totally. Item box cart style, you think?
Yeah, you know, you would get into an item box and then you would be able to use like your Pokemon special move or whatever. Like if you're racing as Zapdos, you'd be able mm-hmm. to do like a Thunder Shock on some guy or something.
Oh, damn, you could drop a Pokeball on the guy behind you and he gets stuck in it for a few seconds before he busts out. Great.
Brilliant, yeah. I'm surprised we haven't seen any kind of Pokemon kart racing.
Yeah, that seems like a no-brainer. I mean, I feel like people would buy it even if it was a piece of shit, if it had like a roster of 30 Pokemon in it.
Yeah, untapped market, guys. Come on, what are you doing?
You could almost accuse the Pokemon Company of nothing less than leaving money on the table, so that is surprising.
Yeah. Well, that's Pokemon 2000, the power of one.
So what's next, Trevor? What are we doing next? Well, first of all,
I'm really afraid it's another Pokemon movie, because I know that another one came out.
Take a breath.
At least relatively soon after.
Take a breath. I need you relaxed.
Okay.
We're going to 2001, not just a fateful year for two iconic towers, uh-huh. but also a year that saw the release of three video game movies. So we're going to be in 2001 for a while.
And they can't all be Pokemon movies, which is a relief to me.
Our most packed year so far will be covering a wide swath of different video game IP, servicing completely distinct demographics of gamers. And I can't think of a better way to kick off this video gaming mega year than by sitting down to watch Pokemon 3, the movie, Spell of the Unknown.
This is the one with the dogs in it, is that right?
I think so. It's got the little weird ones that are shaped like letters, that's for sure.
I remember even as a kid thinking that these things were one of the worst additions to the Pokemon franchise.
So stupid. And they like tied in with the Game Boy printer. We'll talk about it. But the thing about this is the last one of these that got North American theatrical release, Trevor. This is,
thank God,
our final Pokemon anime boss.
Well, that'll be fun, but until then,
will it be fun though?
I hope.
But for Box Office Ba-bombs, I've been Dylan Flynn.
I've been Trevor Ickrath.
And until next time, so long, Gay Bowser.
This has been a production of
The Lighthouse Keepers Company.
Culture illuminated.